Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 63, a special episode live from Storage Networking World. Last week, I had a chance to go to Storage Networking World in Dallas, Texas, and while I was there, Calvin Zito from HP pulled aside two smart guys, one of them being Ray Lucchese, the other Howard Marks, and I guess you'd put Calvin and myself in that smart person category. But nonetheless, we had a chance to record a quick podcast. It's actually going to be co-presented or co-distributed both through the HP podcast that Calvin is working on, as well as this podcast here. Had a chance to record it. Hope you enjoy it. Here it is.
My name's Ray Lucchese. I'm with Silverton Consulting. I am on Twitter as Ray Lucchese, and I have a blog, rayonstorage.com.
And I'm Howard Marks. I blog at Network Computing and run Deep Storage Test Lab. And you can find me on Twitter at DeepStorageNet.
And I'm Calvin Zito. I'm a HP storage guy on Twitter, and you can find my blog at www.hp.com/storage/blog. So we're here at SNW. We wanted to kind of just get four guys that are kind of been around the industry for a while and want to talk about what we're seeing at SNW.
You've been around the industry for a while, Howard?
A few years.
Unlike myself, I'm relatively novice at this.
Because I wrote my first article in a computer magazine in 1494.
I was somewhat after that, 1496.
I was still in elementary school then, so I'm not quite that old. And Rick's probably the youngster of the group here. So
Rick's got the least amount of hair, though. I don't understand.
Hey, it's inverse relationship.
That's because he cuts it short.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
I'm balder than that.
So let's talk about SNW. I mean, I think one of the things I came here wondering is this still a vendor love fest? And I think we've.
God, I don't know. There certainly are some vendors here. There are certainly some vendors missing from this show. It seems like we've talked previously, there seems to be more end user customers than vendors on the floor and in the sessions and stuff like that. Although there's still a lot of vendor sessions, I would say.
Yeah, there's a lot of vendor sessions, but in years past, the people I would bump into and talk to in the halls would be mostly vendors, and this year those are mostly end users.
There
are also a lot of local end users that, you know, this is, you know, the truth is pretty much every trade show is regional, and we're in Texas and we're seeing a lot of Texans.
Mm-hmm. I've certainly seen people from other places, no doubt, but there are a lot of Texans that I've seen here, and I think the fact that SNIA and Computer World, who both co-sponsor SNW, have been smart to move it around.
Yeah.
And this seems to be like a good place to have moved it, because maybe they have done it here before.
Well,
Has it been here before?
Gaylord.
That's right, it was at the Gaylord.
They did
Palms.
Out by the airport.
Yeah, versus in town like this.
Yeah.
I like the in town. I like the venue better than Gaylord. I would have to say it's not as expansive. You know, running from the room to the exhibit is not, you know, a 15-mile jog or anything like that.
Haven't been to the media center.
I have been to the media center.
It is as far as possible away from the show floor as you could be.
I knew you were going to say that at some point, Howard.
Yeah, but
Siberia,
but
right?
The HP conference room is not that far from the escalator.
You'll have to tell me where that is, because I still don't know where it is. So
down the block here a ways.
Okay.
It's a good strategy by condensing the surface area, if you will, of the event. You can bring that intimate feeling back to it, because you know, whatever the number is and whatever the distribution is, if you've got a number of people, if it's too big of a place, it's going to really feel dead. Mm-hmm. But if you kind of condense it a little bit, you can milk it for what it's worth. And I didn't go to, I guess it would have been the San Jose
one.
Yeah.
That's kind of an anomaly, because the profile of businesses, you know, a lot of the vendors, that's local for them.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
I liked doing it in Santa Clara
because
you got the vendor participation. Right. There were a lot of people for me to see and talk to.
So,
but I'm a press guy, and what I need from this conference.
Okay, are you a press guy? Wait a minute. I thought you were a blogger. I thought you were an analyst. Never mind.
And so, you know, what I'm looking for is different than what an end user who's going to go sit in the sessions is looking for.
Yeah.
I count myself lucky if I go to a conference like this and I get to go to a session, because I'm meeting with vendors.
Yeah, we're meeting with vendors as analyst level, you know, kinds of things. We hardly ever get to sessions unless we're actually presenting the sessions themselves, you know, that sort of thing. But from that perspective, it's still a viable conference. I still meet a lot of vendors here. not all the vendors are here, but some of the vendors that aren't displaying are still here. And some of the vendors that are displaying, obviously.
Although my schedule is a lot later than it has been at the Orlando conferences.
Yeah, wait a minute, so. I want to check something here, Ray. You mean you're meeting with vendors who aren't sponsoring the event here?
Oh, yeah.
There ought to be a rule against that. They're just coming in and dogpiling on
and
using the event.
They're here for various non-sponsorship
happens
kinds
all
of things.
I've seen some of my friends send tweets that are companies that aren't here, aren't sponsoring, saying, hey, any customers want to meet with me? I'm here. So
there was the one year they put a guard at the press room and wouldn't let anybody who wasn't a press or a sponsor in there.
Oh, that's Gestapo-like. Yeah.
Yes.
They haven't done, well, in fact, I don't know. I haven't met anybody like that here.
No, they have.
Much looser here.
The SNIA Computer World folks have learned their lesson from that because, frankly, several of us wrote really snarky comments about it.
A snarky comment about it?
Yeah.
Like, Ray, you're talking about big names, right? You're not talking about stealth startups, or are you talking about both?
I'm talking about, so stealth startups, more or less, the people that are sponsoring, you know, they're on the exhibit floor, you can meet with them, and that works okay. There are a couple of startups, not really startups anymore, but, you know, small concerns that are floating around that have, you know, done sessions or presentations that you can schedule a talk with some of them. Certain large vendors that aren't exhibiting, and also you could schedule talks with them. So.
Yeah, I saw several NetApp folks, and NetApp isn't here.
So, but you've been on the floor. What do you think of the floor? I thought that it was a pretty good session.
Well, actually, you know, those of you who know me on Twitter, I do work for Veeam, but, you know, I'm here on the blogger side, you know, community-wise. But we lucked out, man. We were right by the lunch line. So I got to talk to everybody and give reviews of the lunch before they went in. But compared to the Orlando event, which is the last one that I worked in a professional capacity, that end user focus is a lot higher. And, you know, it's just the location. This is a great location with a lot of end user base, a lot of regional feed, right?
Right.
I'm talking to people that have driven from Arkansas,
right.
You know, mid and central and south Texas, you know, so... the users, and you know, for me, this is my first day here, but nobody's like bored or disappointed. So, I'm having fun talking.
How could you be bored or disappointed with tornadoes here?
Oh, hey,
we gotta bring that up, right?
Tornado.
Yeah. So, yeah, there were tornado warnings, and they made announcements that we should avoid the windows, which was interesting. In the press room, which has two of its walls are windows,
so
they had moved all of us out into, you know, another bunker room to hide from the terrible weather.
Well, and the hotel we're at is right next to the convention center, and somebody told me they evacuated the convention center like half hour ago, and I'm standing there, and everybody's standing in front of the windows. It's like, well, wait a minute. Were they evacuated there, and people are standing on the balcony smoking?
So they moved a lot of people down, apparently, to the parking lot and down underneath the hotel and stuff like that. So I was supposed to meet with HP, right, at 2:15. And I was in my room. I was staying in the bathroom because they said you can go to the bathroom because it's away from the windows and stuff. I had the door closed and everything. I finally said, well, the meeting's ready. You know, it doesn't look that bad. So I took the elevator downstairs, and I was at the meeting conference room. There was nobody there because they were all elsewhere.
Yeah.
And so Craig had to kind of sneak up to get to the meeting and such. But, you know, in the end, we met and it worked out okay. And then they called off the tornado watch, but... it was still raining pretty bad out there.
Yeah, there were a few times.
It was even worse. You know?
Yeah, you look outside and it looked worse than when they had the tornado watch, because you look outside, you couldn't see 5 feet because it was raining so hard.
Yeah. Little excitement in Dallas.
But anyway, I'm sure this is like old news now. Hopefully, you know, people that are listening saw all this on CNN. I'm hearing it made national news, and Dallas gets wiped out by a tornado. We're all fine here at SNW, and I'm not aware of any casualties. And we, in fact, didn't see Toto, the Wicked Witch of the West, or the Tin Man anywhere around here.
You tweeted to that.
I did.
I did say that, but that was
absolutely flip and sarcasm.
Did see the spinster lady on her bicycle, though.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, thank you. She was just bicycling around, though. She wasn't actually flying.
No, she wasn't actually flying, and she hadn't stolen Toto.
Yeah, thank God.
So I don't want to put pressure on you guys, but, you know, being that, you know, I walk around here with sandwich boards and billboards saying that I'm HP, with the shirts I wear and everything, but I don't get a lot of information from going around and talking to
people.
You
are subtle.
I am pretty subtle about it, I don't get a lot of information about what's going on the floor at the show, and frankly, I don't try to, because it's
I've seen a lot of interesting... a lot of SSD, more SSD every time. Every time one of these shows fires up, there's more variants of SSD. The guys, don't know if you saw Viking.
Vikings got some cool stuff.
So they've got, effectively, they're putting an SSD card in a DIMM slot. They're powering it up with a memory power, and they're plugging a SATA chain to it. And they got a 32 terabyte 1U. All SSD, all DIMM, all, you know, it's amazing.
So they've actually got two of those. The simple one just uses the DIMM socket for power and has a SATA connector on
right,
the top.
Right. The other one's the one
that's
more complex,
in the 1U, they took some of the unused traces on the DIMM socket and put the SATA on it.
Yeah, so it's
so there aren't any cables at all, and they built this 1U box that it's just a demonstration. They're not going to sell it.
It wasn't real. It wasn't exact.
But it's got 32 terabytes of these 8 gig
MLC
DIMMs, and 3 gigabyte SAS channels out the back to make this 32 terabyte god awful fast. Disk.
I mean, it sounds great, but does it have like software features on
the controller?
No, no, no.
They're selling the DIMMs.
Okay, they're selling.
And they
the
built
DIMMs.
This thing to show what you could do with it. They're not selling it.
So they're not sending. They're not looking for end user customers.
No,
they're promoting to vendors.
I disagree.
They're looking for end user customers for the version that has the SATA connector on the top, because you can take your DL380 that has unused DIMM sockets.
No, that's not supported by HP.
And take your power at 2950.
You can take your Super Micro server.
Whatever.
That has unused DIMM slots. Yeah. Put these in the DIMM slots, and they're 8 gig SSDs.
Yeah.
And you could then put an LSI Mega RAID in and RAID
them
together, or use LSI's Cascade software and use them as cache against the disks that are in the front. But the coolest thing in the Viking booth wasn't the flash one, but the non-volatile memory version.
Oh, I didn't see that.
They've got an 8 gig DIMM. It's NVRAM, so it's dynamic RAM. It's got a flash on it, and it got a little connector that goes to an ultra cap. So if the system loses power, it dumps the RAM to the flash, and when the system gets power back, it recovers the RAM to the flash. So it's NVRAM. If you were building a storage system, all you have to do now is write the software. Mm-hmm. You can put these things in slots.
Yeah.
Commodity.
DIMM. You know, it's that particular piece isn't commodity, but
that piece is
hundreds, not thousands of dollars.
Commodity servers.
And no R&D on the hardware.
Yeah.
You put those in some DIMM slots. Now you've got 8, 16, 32 gig of
cache.
NVRAM to use as write cache, that, and then you can use MLC flash for your read cache, and that's a powerful controller. You could do a hybrid system. You could do an SSD
system.
Tomorrow,
you and I should just get together.
We need to come up with a business name. What are you guys going to be?
My ex-wife made me give up programming many years ago because it made me antisocial.
And that's changed?
No, but as antisocial as I am, now imagine what I'd be like if I was still programming.
Actually, they struck my coding privileges back. I was working at Storage Tech at the time. I made a change like 2:30 in the morning one time, and they came in the next morning and they withdrew my coding privileges. I was the second line manager at the time. I don't know why they do such a thing.
No approval.
No, apparently.
Yeah, nice.
But
so
Viking's pretty impressive what they've got and what they're doing.
Yeah, they're doing unique packaging.
Yeah,
which
I would say so.
In and of itself is interesting because it opens the possibility to do all sorts of other cool things.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's plenty of other SSD stuff. Nimbus is out there with their latest product.
Nimbus is out there. Avere is out there.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Several. You know, and I haven't seen the whole floor yet. But the all SSD market is still going strong.
There's a lot of those guys that have come out of stealth mode though that aren't here, which I was kind of surprised.
Pure and Solid Fire.
Exactly. I mean, I expected to see some of those guys here,
and
none of them are here, and that has me kind of scratching my head a little bit. Why they didn't
Extreme
show up?
IO.
Yeah, that's the hot stuff. You have to.
Extreme IO.
Where do you go if you don't go here?
Publicly yet.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. They're Extreme IO is out of stealth that they let it. They're letting us know they exist.
Yeah.
But they're not really.
They're not totally out yet.
They're not totally out yet. They're still trickling information out.
Well, that along with the few big guys that I think, you know, probably a year or two ago made decision that it's not worth their marketing spend to come here.
Uh-huh.
But those are the guys that I'm most surprised about.
That they're not trying to get some awareness.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the place to do it. I mean, make up some news. I mean,
well,
do something.
Maybe they've got the stig that there's not enough end users.
Well, you know, if you're Next Gen or Teagle or
Starboard,
then you come to an event like this partially to see end users, but partially to get folks like us to write about you.
Yeah.
And build sales channels.
And build some buzz.
Yeah.
Did those guys try and talk to you? Because one of them that you just mentioned, I know I saw him tweeting that I'm going to be there. Who wants to meet with me? Partners, customers, who wants to meet with me?
No, I haven't. You know, I've talked to all of those guys, but not in conjunction.
Not here.
No.
You know, like I said,
the CMO from one of those is, I know he's here.
I know Carl is here,
but
I haven't seen him.
Yeah.
You know.
And I haven't either, but I don't know. Maybe you're having weather problems in Denver. I saw something that there was a snowstorm there.
There was a snowstorm. It was like 85 Sunday, and it was supposed to snow Monday.
I was there Sunday during that 85, and I got delayed coming here. And it's like, wow, it's glorious. Can it let us out on the tarmac while we're getting stuck here for 2 hours for mechanical problems? But no, they didn't.
It's got interesting weather in Denver now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So what else besides SSD that you guys have seen and? Anything else that piqued your interest that you saw on the floor?
I got to spend all of an hour and a half on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, including eating lunch.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen very much.
Yep.
And I'm just now starting to write a report on using SSDs for server-side caching. So the SSD guys were the guys that I was seeking out to go talk to
and
make sure I did my research. I saw several of the people I normally see, you know, Qlogic is there, and you know those guys.
Fusion.io.
Yeah, that was another one that surprised me.
That's a surprising one.
Yeah.
That they have, you know, they've usually come in, you know, with the 10x20 and the video wall.
How about Violin? I'm not sure I saw them.
I didn't see Violin.
I'm not sure if I saw them listed in the guide. I thought I did, but I didn't see them on the floor.
Didn't see them.
And there's a couple of small players there. Right? I didn't really talk to them at all.
No. Yeah. The other interesting thing is the consumer SSD guys trying to move up into the enterprise.
Yeah.
The OCZs of the world.
Yeah.
You know, 3 years ago, you know, the word was if you're going to use an SSD in an enterprise array, it has to be a StackZeus IOPS, and you know that was the only acceptable choice.
And the one other vendor that I know we haven't mentioned, and I have to say it because I'm from Boise, is Micron.
They're
here.
Had a good meeting with them.
It got the button.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and it flashes and everything. But I find it very interesting that we now have guys like OCZ who have who have their enterprise division and are saying, our SSDs are just as good as those guys' SSDs.
Yeah. Well, it's just like to my perspective, SSD is an enabling technology, and people are coming out of the woodwork configuring SSDs in various storage configurations with SATA, with regular disk, with SSD only for cloud, for various other targeted markets. Broaden the market considerably. Now, how that all plays out in the long term, who knows?
There's a lot of interesting stuff going on.
Oh,
and
God, more so this
it's a wild
has been
and if you
10
look,
years.
And if you look, yeah. And if you look at the way the major vendors are addressing it, most of what the major vendors are doing is taking SSDs and shoehorning them into their existing systems and writing another software layer to manage it.
Yeah,
they're succeeding to various degrees, but the worst of those is the guy who lived across from me in the dorm in my sophomore year in college bought a 240 Datsun 240Z and put a small block Chevy engine in it. And the thing went a straight line like a bat out of hell.
Yeah.
But it was so front heavy that if you tried to turn it all, the rear end would come around and you'd go down the road backwards.
I don't think that correlates with SSD. I'm not sure how that plays out in SSD space.
I see what he's saying. Just because the bus is the same doesn't mean you shouldn't shove them into existing
arrays. But if you have an array that does sublun tiering, you have an array line and you added SSDs and you added sublun tiering to it.
Yeah.
And the sublun tiering is moving data a gigabyte at a time.
You think that's too much to move?
Well, yes. You know, if you then the index on my Oracle database is not
sub gigabyte.
Is going to be sub gigabyte, and the hotspot, and you know, my hotspots are going to be relatively small. Hotspots are, you know, probably on the order of a megabyte, maybe smaller. And if I have to take a gigabyte to get a megabyte to get the same impact from those SSDs that I have to for a system where a guy
does,
yes, I think I have to. I think to get the same performance boost in a system that has that large granularity because it has to be backwards compatible to the design it used to have.
Yeah, you have a long tail of code.
That you need a lot
more.
That you'll need a lot more SSD in that model than in a system that was designed from scratch to be a hybrid system and has a log-based file system and small granularity. And
bring back auto RAID. That's all I can say. Bring back
iceberg.
And iceberg.
You frequently hear people say that, you know, the problem is you can't put SSDs behind controllers because the controllers can't keep up. But the controllers in the new generation hybrid arrays are the same controllers. You know, it's the same Xeon.
Well, it's really the back end. It's more the issue, right?
It's the data layout. It's how you put the data out. How you store it. If you've got a system that was designed to keep logical blocks adjacent and sequential.
It's not going
to
work.
That's going to be very inefficient when you switch from spinning disks that are really efficient for sequential and suck at random to flash, which is just as good at random as it is at sequential.
And you're pinning your I/O to cells. You're not evenly wearing them too.
Hopefully the
flash
controller in the SSD will do a good enough job.
Stuff,
But true. But your point is true that if I've got 10 SSDs and I'm wear leveling across the chips in each of the 10, but not wear leveling across the 10, something's going to wear out sooner than if I wear leveled on bigger.
It's interesting. I talked to Viking and I asked how much over provisioning they did. And it's MLC, right?
Right.
And they said, well, if it's a heavy write application, you know, maybe you, so in a 512 gig configuration, you might take it down to 350 or 400, something like that. If it was a read-only thing, it might be 450 or something like that. So in a 512. So that was raw. 32 terabytes was raw MLC NAND.
Right.
No over-provisioning.
Yeah, no, that Viking device is not very sophisticated. It is a building block for people to do cool things with. Yeah. It's not a solution in and of itself yet.
I think we could take that and run with it if we wanted to. You'd have to start programming.
I know.
Well, the thing that is the maybe least technical out of all you like big brains in the room.
No, that would be me.
Okay, well, I'm not sure I'll give you that honor, but I think I'll still take it. But the thing that's I think is cool with SSD is I'd say a few years ago there were a few big vendors out there pushing it about how we're going to slap these into our arrays and it's going to overtake the world and fiber channel drives are going to go away. And yeah, it was even before we knew SAS was like right around the corner. But you know, the fact is hard drives aren't going away.
No.
Tomorrow.
Hard drives
but SSDs are really getting real now. It's no longer a buzzword bingo term. It's real.
It's real, and regardless of what your system configuration is in your data center, you can find a way to get some real bang for the buck.
Yeah.
Whether it's putting SSDs in the servers to use as cache because you still have 2 years to go on the lease on your array, you could get that benefit right away. You don't have to wait till you do that forklift upgrade. If you've got performance problems, or if you're short stroking and that solved your performance problem, but now you have capacity problems.
And the SSD can.
Then, if you put some flash into the path somewhere, and there's 27 ways to do it, then you can solve those problems.
25 ways to do it.
but I think the 25 or 27 is also an important point. I think part of the issue you guys hit on before is that, I mean, there's some people who are going to be stuck putting it someplace. One place, because that's the only place they can put it based on their architecture today.
Right.
That's, I think, one thing that customers are going to have to be careful of is buying into, well, put it in, you know, here's my hammer, there's
your
nail.
Well, you know,
you got to be careful where you put it.
Your array vendor is going to tell you it should go in the array.
Absolutely.
Your server vendor is going to tell you it should go in the server.
And there'll be people that do both that say, we can help you figure out where it best should be.
It belongs to the network.
This is true. But you know, it's the same kind of silo we have in the IT department.
Yeah.
You know, part of it becomes which guy is going to solve the problem. if the server guys are going to solve the problem, it's going to be easier for them to solve it with Flash in the server and a caching layer. If the storage guys are tasked with solving the problem, then they could put Flash in the array, or they could put, you know, an inline caching appliance between the servers in the
array. So is internal IT organization going to have a pretty controlling factor? Because in a lot of those places, we know storage and server guys don't talk to each other.
Still. No. Look, whichever, you know, in the infrastructure group in most large IT departments, there's the network group, the storage group, and the server group.
VMware guy.
And
and now there's a new guy in the party.
And they don't get along.
Right.
They're all, not that they necessarily, well, the storage guys and the network guys don't think very highly.
They've teamed up against the VMware and server guys. The lines are drawn.
But it's all about turf.
Yep.
You know, I want more budget. I'm more responsible. I want more guys that report to me.
Now the keynote session last night was very interesting. The guy from Feld Consulting, he was a CIO for Frito-Lay and worked at a number of other places. And he was talking about how IT has to turn now. A CIO has to turn from playing a defensive game, trying to, you know, limit activities and stuff, to being more offensive, trying to get ahead of the curve, trying to find out where the business is going, and trying to prepare the infrastructure and integrate it across the business units and stuff like that. So it was very interesting from that perspective.
Yeah, because if you run...
Historically, it's been...
If you're the CIO who's Dr. No, and whenever anybody comes to you and wants to propose a project, you just say no. Yeah. We've reached the point where the users will just go to some cloud provider and get that application as a service cut you out.
It's bigger than that.
They're not qualified to make that decision.
The business will pass you by now. If you can't hang, you will be superseded and
Employer will be superseded.
Yeah, exactly.
And you'll be out of a job, not because you aren't CIO of the company anymore, but because you don't have a company.
It's not sustainable.
More of an agile kind of environment where you have to move with the market, you have to move with your consumers, where they're going, you have to be. Yeah. And in order to do that from an IT perspective, takes a different mindset, a different talent set.
And that's another aspect that you're kind of touching on it, dancing around it, but I'll just say it. I'm always leery of these trends that vendors jump on, and being a vendor and seeing my own compatriots doing this at times and jumping on a term. And I was part of the ILM wave
And
I was, you know, front and center driving that. And I'm embarrassed at some of the stuff we said we'd have in 3 years. And, you know, we still can't do it today. You know, self-healing storage. We're going to have self-healing storage next week. Anyway, the other trend that I think you guys are alluding to in this whole conversation about IT and what IT and how business is going around IT is cloud. I mean, let's get real here. I mean, for a long time, cloud was a big washing too, but make no mistake about it, cloud is real, and it's here to stay. And if there are still customers who are thinking that this is just a trend that's going to fade away, they're probably mistaken. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I would say so.
Oh, yeah. You know, and if in large companies, there's a substantial amount of inertia. But
it's going to take to get over that. Small companies are adopting mid-sized
companies where legions, the email administrators are going, you can only have 25 meg for your mailbox quota.
Hey, we had those, 10 at the place I came from before.
But those guys are deservedly going to lose their jobs
people are going to go on
some department is going to go, well, the heck with that. I'm going to go get hosted Exchange.
We got Gmail and Dropbox. We're good. Yeah. Just disable my account.
Yeah. And so you have to be delivering a product that's comparable to what
available
a consumer can buy with this, you know, to what a sales guy can buy on his expense account.
Absolutely.
Or he'll just go buy it on his expense account. That means that your valuable corporate assets are going to be in Dropbox, which has no security
issue
at all.
Right. We'll take it the next level, right? It's one of those decisions where if I'm the naysayer of a technology, you know what? Play it the other way. I might be pro-cloud or I might be pro-server hugger or whatever. You have to talk yourself in and out of these decisions as a decision maker, as the IT pro. You have to say, you know what? If I'm getting pressure sideways from my stakeholders of, you know what, we'd like a cloud solution, or I'm reading, you know, these smart bloggers, talking myself included, talking about cloud, or I just think that it might be an option, go through the drill, whatever it is, storage for backups, applications as a service, hosted email, you name it, give it a try. I mean, you have to know, you have to have the experience with your own personal requirements, if it's going to work, that is the best gauge. Forget about dollars. If it's going to work, be adopted. Wait, hold, you know,
it's very trialable. The cloud, the services that are out there are very trialable without, you know, a major endeavor, a major investment of time or effort.
A lot of them just use your credit card and go, you know, go pay for the service and use it for a few.
Pilot projects can be up in days.
Literally, yeah, I would say hours, but yeah.
But, you know, where...
But you run a real lab, I only run a virtual lab.
Yeah. So the one other thing that I think is a, you know, one of those buzzword bingo terms that is out there that just want to throw it out there and see what you guys think is of course the one that we just got to mention is big data. Where are you guys at with that one?
Big data is here. It's never gone away. I mean, Hadoop is making it easier than ever to you know, configure a warehouse, fire it up, do some real analytics with it.
And do it on an order of magnitude larger data than you used
absolutely.
To be able to.
Without having expensive infrastructure surrounding it or database warehouses, Teradata kind of solutions or whatever to support it. It takes more effort. It's open source. You've got to know what you're doing Linux wise and building it and creating the MapReduce and analytics and stuff like that. But
it means
it means
you have got to hire a couple of good guys.
But
their first 2 years of salary will be paid for in what you saved because all you bought was a whole bunch of servers with local disks and you didn't have to buy a huge storage.
So we're past the point where we're past the point where it's more than just buying a scale out NAS and calling it big data.
Well, the problem is that big data is one of those terms people use to mean several different things.
Absolutely,
it's a gravy term.
The core meaning to Ray and I and probably a lot of other people is this analytics on
unstructured
hundreds
data.
Of terabytes of semi-structured or unstructured data.
To me, it's unstructured and semi-structured, and it's creating a structure surrounding unstructured data with commodity storage, commodity hardware, and open system software.
But so, other people are using that term to mean, you know, huge archives. So they're just saying it's all about petabytes, and it's not about what you do with it.
Yeah.
Well, and those are also problems. You know, if you start looking at being a hospital and having to store digital X-rays for 20 or 30 years, that
or longer,
and those X-rays, well, under HIPAA, it's 2 years past when the patient reaches the age of consent for pediatrics is the longest retention. Right. So if a baby needs an X-ray,
I thought there was some element of HIPAA where they had to save it for the life of the patient. Though, isn't
that's OSHA.
Is it OSHA? Okay.
That's an employer requirement, not a hospital requirement.
Okay.
But I'm a little data guy. Metadata.
Are you a little data?
Little data. Right. I think that's one of the most, maybe Hadoop.
I've heard that term a few times here. I don't know if you've
really?
Heard it. People say we can't ignore little data because people are getting so hot about big data. Let's not ignore the little data.
That's the other half of it because especially with unstructured content and especially with media, rich media, photos, videos, audio, the metadata, a.k.a. little data, I think is the key to managing that. And it can play into big data, right? So that's one of those things with, you know, personal electronics that do it all differently, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's a huge opportunity for the little data
and
people.
The objects keep getting bigger and bigger. Yeah. You know, it becomes big data.
More and more important.
Not because big data, we have millions more photos. I mean, if you're State Farm, every time somebody crashes their car, there's digital photos of the damage. Well, 5 years ago, those were 2 megapixel digital photos.
Yeah.
Today, they're 15 megapixel digital. So it's not more data objects, but they're bigger.
No, my wife just bought a new, I actually got it for an SLR that's a Nikon, I think, and I'm having to now manage these pictures. They're, you know, each one is like 5-6 megabytes each, and, you know, she goes to something and takes 20 pictures of, you know, it's rapid fire trying to get a good picture of my son playing basketball. Honey, I don't have enough storage space for
Calvin,
this.
I can help you with that problem.
Yeah, we know how.
I know this is a two-meter storage vendor.
I think you need SSDs.
I should be able to help with that, too. Unfortunately, we don't have a loaner program to give employees storage for all this stuff. But
you get a good discount on HP Home Server, don't you?
Cloud services?
The cloud services stuff, I will need to find out about. My old manager is actually in the business development group of the cloud services stuff, so I'm going to need to find out how
Doesn't
I can
HP
get some
have
of that.
A photo sharing service?
Yeah, we have that too, but none of that has employee discounts.
It's come on.
Not that I'm aware of. There may be.
Talk to Meg. I'm sure you can work this out.
I'm going to have to figure this out because I am not in tune with what the employee discounts are, and I'm obviously not taking advantage of them. But the one thing I want to get on big data. Because this is actually a genuine question I don't know the answer to. There's a few people I know in the industry that have been long time involved with business intelligence, data warehousing, and it almost seems like I hear them saying that, yeah, we've been doing this for a long time. How is big data analytics different from what people used to do with...
They have been doing it for a long time, but it was all based on structured data. So you based on transactions embedded in some sort of relational database. You spin the relational database over the data warehouse. They go out and look at it with their analytical tools using SQL.
Yeah, so when I was in the casino business.
You were in the casino business too?
These guys done everything.
Wow, what another thing?
Hot dogs at Yankee
beer.
Stadium, casino
beer, no,
business,
beer.
Or beer?
Oh,
beer. Yeah, beer.
Yeah, you made more money selling beer at Yankee Stadium than hot dogs, especially in August. I was a consultant, there are some gigs were 4 or 5 months. I mean, I would spent like 3 years at various casinos. And casinos were
You were actually working,
early.
Not playing there.
No, in the IT department.
Okay.
I was playing also, but curiously, when I'm working in a casino, I'm less interested in playing than when I'm just visiting, but that's a whole other story. But the most perishable commodities in the world are hotel rooms and airline seats.
Yeah, sure.
If you don't sell them, they're gone. You never got any money for them. And so casinos started data warehousing and business analytics from the slot club card very early on. Because if I know that you're the kind of guy who will come play $50 blackjack on a Wednesday, and that 8 weeks from now, that Wednesday
is
isn't filling up,
we need to...
you're getting a flyer in the mail that says that there's a free night and 2 dinners at the steakhouse if you'll come and stay on Wednesday.
You just described my neighbor, because he gets these letters all the time from the casinos in Wendover. They love him.
Action, yeah.
Right. So, it started off with, let's send it to the whole club. And we started getting the analytics much more focused. But that was all based on the data from the slot club.
But the key point I think you guys are saying is that we're talking about the structured data.
First of all, we're talking about doing analytics on unstructured data, or semi-structured
very,
data.
Very, very unusual up until Hadoop came along.
And second of all, we're talking about scale out. So that you're not talking about one big, you're not talking about a DL980 to compute this. You're talking about 50 DL160s.
Yeah.
And that it's commodity hardware with low-cost open source software that you can just throw this problem at and go, here, you guys crunch on it for a couple of days. Tell me what's going on.
Yeah, it's not efficient. The use of the storage is not efficient use of the servers, but, for the price and the capabilities that brings to bear, it's very impressive what you can do with that stuff.
Yeah, it's not equipment efficient. It's very dollar efficient.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So the other thing that I mean, when this conversation comes up, it's always Hadoop, and it almost seems like Hadoop is getting, I don't want to say too much attention, but there's other games in town, right? I mean, it's not just Hadoop the only one.
I don't follow it enough to know of any. Yeah.
So Hadoop is sort of an underlying, so it's the Hadoop file system and the Hadoop management, and then you've got various tools that sit on top of Hadoop to do various types of analytics. MapReduce will take the structured data and sort of create a structure on top of it, which you can then query and try to understand. There are tools that actually will be more SQL-like, that's SQL-lite, kinds of stuff, access to that data. There are other tools out there.
Well, that's what actually when I just read about it, actually, is NoSQL or something like
SQL
that.
NoSQL is another game, another database kind of solution, which is moving away from SQL altogether.
NoSQL is about getting rid of the huge centralized Oracle server that you have to pay Uncle Larry maintenance on every year, and building a scale-out system.
Surrounding.
But that instead of being, but it's not the kind of consistent database that we're used to with
SQL.
An
ACID consistency. Yeah.
That it's eventually consistent. That eventually all the copies
like
of the
cloud,
database
actually,
will
cloud
be,
storage
will become consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're building Facebook, eventually consistent is good enough. Yeah. If you post a photo and 20 of your friends are supposed to see it, and 7 of your friends see it in 30 seconds and seven more seated 40 seconds and seven more seated a minute and a half.
Not a big deal.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Works fine.
Yep.
You can't run financials on it.
Yeah,
you know, you don't want to sell
a credit card transaction. Yeah. Launching
missiles.
Like
but there's a lot of databases where eventual consistency is good enough. I can distribute the, I can have multiple sites and multiple databases and multiple locations on cheap servers and have this kind of Cassandra database.
And you know, it's not all about cost, right? You really have full control.
Oh, and
I mean, because I mean, you know, these other database platforms, Oracle, SQL Server, mainframe, whatever, these other, you know, legacy approaches, you are a little bit more constrained than what you can do with these Hadoops and NoSQLs. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
It's all open source.
And it's,
right?
And even if you're not the kind of organization that's going to dig into the open source and put tweaks in it, it's a different model.
Right.
It's, you know, if you had five data centers and you wanted to have SQL Server serving a database for application servers in five data centers, well, then you need to have replicas and replication and a lot of bandwidth and really a lot of, you got to pay a lot of attention to make sure that that thing's working right all the time.
Yeah.
And if you go to a NoSQL model, you go, it could be a second or 2 seconds or a minute out of sync. Who cares? Good enough.
Yeah.
It's a different world. I mean, and cloud storage to some extent is eventual consistency today. I mean, what with a replication going on, you could deposit something in a cloud storage. You can try to retrieve it. You may retrieve, you know, different versions of it depending on which replica you access at any instant in time, which makes it a very interesting product environment for backups or file storage or something like that. Archive is probably okay because you don't have to retrieve it right away. But
right,
you know, for a backup service, it's a different game.
Although you don't really retrieve backups right away.
Well, it depends on what you're retrieving. I mean, if you need a file from a backup, that's one thing.
But we're talking about right away in terms of minutes. You rarely do a restore from a backup you did less than an hour ago.
Yeah. You obviously don't have Time Machine.
I'm not. I don't Mac, so I don't have Time Machine.
I restore occasionally from something I wrote minutes ago. Not too often, but every once in a while.
Well,
but that's another story.
Yeah.
So I think the next S&W is back in Santa Clara.
I
thought it was in Orlando.
No, they're doing a fall in October in
Santa
Clara,
Clara,
which I actually, I'm a little confused as to why they came here, because Santa Clara was a year ago. It looks like they're somehow skipping the East Coast, or maybe this is now the East Coast venue.
Orlando's the East Coast.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but they're skipping it.
It was in October, right? Well, no, they did that in October of last year.
Yeah, so now they're going to go two without going to Orlando or doing anything on the East Coast. So I don't know. Anyway, but this has been good. Hopefully, we'll see more customers show up the next time. What do you guys hope you see at the next one? I mean, obviously, we'll have a lot more vendors there and a lot more people
we're
friends
with.
It's always nice to do it in the Valley because the vendor, you know, even if they're not exhibiting,
The vendors will show up.
There's a lot, you know, a lot more accessibility for folks like us.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Well, for me, that'll be in the middle of the Boise State season, so I don't know if I'll make it over there, but we'll see. Hopefully, I can squeeze it in between football games.
I'm sure there's a TV that's adjusted to show the field in blue.
Well, the problem is I have seats, so I kind of have like a rule that I miss enough games as it is. I try not to miss any.
Well,
for
it won't be on a Saturday.
That's true, and there should be no excuse for me getting home in time on a Saturday.
Tornadoes,
for
of course.
Yeah.
Like
that. Yeah. Guys, well, this has been great. Good seeing you guys here, and hopefully we'll catch up to each other sometime soon. But thanks for doing the podcast with us today.
Thanks, Calvin.
Thanks.
My pleasure.
Yep.